A profile of the UK Library's Oral History Department, today on UK Perspectives. I'm Alan Lytle, in this week for Tom Goodell. The Louis B. Nunn Center for Oral History has made its mark in academic circles as one of the top oral history centers in the country. Doug Boyd is the center's director. Doug, welcome to UK Perspectives.
It's good to be here.
How has the field of oral history changed in just, say, the last 10 years?
Well, I think early on there was a great emphasis on collection when people really realized that portable recording equipment could be used to capture individual stories. There was a great surge in popularity. So we're talking about the analog period. Cassette recorders really had a massive impact on the popularity because people didn't have to lug around reel-to-reel recorders or even know how to use the reel-to-reel recorders. So what's really changed over the last 10 years has been how the archives have been able to respond and provide access to these. Because people have been collecting for some time, and digital recorders now are allowing for that collection to really increase dramatically. I think on campus more and more we're seeing individual classes doing oral history projects. We're seeing neighborhood associations doing oral history projects. It's really exploding with popularity. With awareness of things like StoryCorps. But still, the interviewing, the technology, that really hasn't been paradigm-shifting change. It's really been, a change of technology, but really the same thing. Where the paradigm-shifting is really occurring is in how the archives are handling these interviews. Because in the past, they used to go, cassettes would come in, they'd be processed, and they'd be put in archival boxes, and they'd put on shelves, and they'd be cataloged. If you were lucky, you'd have money in your project and you'd be able to transcribe them. And if they were transcribed, the interviews typically got a much greater level of use. So when I came on in 2008, we used to talk about how 500 people a year would use our collections. Now, at the time, we had about 6,000 interviews, and very few of them were transcribed. We did have some transcripts online. We did have some interviews online. But we had very limited use because it was difficult to discover what we had. The challenge with oral history really is you could have a name and you could have a project title, but if you didn't have extensive descriptive information about what's in the interview or a transcript, you had very limited ability to search in that. So I could propose a researcher could come to me and I could... and would be posed by this challenge. They'd say, I'm researching the civil rights movement in Louisville, and I could say, I've got 200 interviews on that topic, but I only have 5 transcripts. And that researcher is going to focus in on those 5 interviews, because otherwise they're going to have to listen and spend 300 hours listening or more, because our interviews are quite long, listening to every detail to try and capture what they can for their research. The reality was, they just didn't. Researchers tend to go the path of least resistance, and as a result, our usage was very low. Now, this is not just the Nunn Center. This is nationally.
As a researcher myself, I've used oral history. It can be very time-consuming and daunting of a task, but you have found ways of getting around that.
The major challenges with oral history are really discovery and usability. So people have a very difficult time finding oral histories in general. And once they find them, if they're not transcribed, you're going to be spending an amazing amount of time listening to interviews in order to really fully understand what's being said and make it useful to your research. So we sought a way to address those major challenges in a way that's going to benefit oral history in general, not just the Nunn Center. So as a general rule, oral history interviewing was great to collect, but when it came into the archive, ultimately, those individual stories weren't being utilized. The whole goal of oral history was to put individual stories on the historical record. The reality, after it went into the archive, it rarely actually happened. So I've really tried to sort of set out to address those challenges.
And that leads us to something called the OHMS system. So why is that such an important development in the field of oral history?
So I used to direct something called the Kentucky Oral History Commission in Frankfort. I spent some time down at the University of Alabama after that experience and focused my energies on digital technologies at the University of Alabama. And when I came back to Kentucky to direct the Nunn Center, had been spending a lot of time thinking about usability, discovery and usability. These were some of the major problems facing oral history. People had a hard time finding those interviews. They had a hard time finding what was in those interviews because these interviews are so rich with information. They can't be really easily described with just a sentence or two in a useful fashion. So really, how can we find a way to make oral history something that people can more easily engage with? And also, I think one of the challenges is the cost of transcription. That was the holy grail. Still is the holy grail for oral history access. If you have a transcription, the odds of that being used are much greater. The problem with transcripts are multifold. They're never perfect. So the mere placement of a comma in a sentence changes meaning. And so to assume that what is transcribed was not just what was said but was actually meant is flawed. So the idea of sarcasm does not transfer to a transcript. So somebody says something, if you don't hear their tone of voice when they're saying it, they could be meaning something completely different. So I was seeing a trend where people would contact the archive and say, just send me the transcript, I don't need the audio. And that was deeply frustrating for me. So the other problem or challenge with transcripts is the cost to produce. Right now we pay it roughly is about $150 to $200 per interview hour to transcribe. If we had transcribed everything that came in to the archive last year, it would have cost us over $250,000 ultimately. So we're constantly looking at more efficient ways, whether speech recognition or some sort of hybrid speech recognition using students or using outsourced vendors. And we've really come upon what currently we feel is the most efficient pathway to a transcript, and that's still costing us about $200 per interview hour when all's said and done to get a verbatim vetted transcript. So that's not cost effective. It's not sustainable. In some ways, when I talk about oral history nationally, I say oral history is really based on a bad business model. If you know we really are going to depend on transcription and grants to do this basic work. So I wanted to create a system that really enhanced access to oral history. And so in 2008, we initiated a project to do just that, to develop a system that would connect users from a textual search to the moment. So if you searched on the word segregation, it would take you to the moment when that person mentions the word segregation in an interview. Very simple system originally. We used a contract programmer to develop it. We drew it up on a napkin and had it implemented within a few months. That led to a tremendous movement of getting these interviews online. We put hundreds of those interviews online using this system, got a lot of attention. But then 2009 happened, and I learned a little bit about what happens when you have an endowment and the economy crashes. So I wasn't able to afford to use the own system that I created because we couldn't transcribe. And so we needed to find another challenge, or we needed to address this new challenge. And that's when we created the indexing system for OHMS. Now, this is what's really getting popular. So indexing in OHMS is really taking somebody listens to the interview, and as they listen, they're tagging or marking the time code where these major subject transitions are happening. And people are describing those transitions. They're giving each segment titles. They can do a partial transcript. They can do keywords or subjects. They can write descriptions of the content in that. They can also use GPS coordinates if somebody's talking about a place, and those GPS coordinates would interface with Google Maps. Or you can use hyperlinks and link out to photographs. And so what we realized is we could index, here at the University of Kentucky, we could index interviews for 1/10 of the cost of transcription. And suddenly, we're back in business. We could enhance access to our interviews for a fraction of the cost.
What's more useful then, a transcript or an index?
Well, obviously, a transcript is going to get you more detail. That's the keyword search. The problem with that is somebody can talk about living under segregation for 3 hours and never once mention what word? segregation. So segregation is more of a concept. So they may be using, you know, all kinds of ways to describe living under segregation. Water fountain, talking about segregated schools, talking about discrimination, talking even about, you know, having to use or, you know, not go into shopping centers or go into certain restaurants. But they may not have used the term segregation. In an index, a user looks at that interview and within 20 seconds sees the things that are listed in the titles and says, ah, in that segment, this person's talking about segregation. Click and understands that the segment that they're about to go into is about life under segregation. So in some ways, an index is actually better for communicating what contents are in this interview. If it was just a transcript, you would be guessing on your search, right? And so you'd have to labor a little bit more to try and figure out the contents. That being said, researchers tend to love that transcript when all's said and done because it gives them something that they can put into text, which is ultimately what they want. So your ideal scenario is that transcripts and an index can work together, and the OHMS system that we created does just that. Let me give you an example of how OHMS works. So somebody has indexed an interview or somebody's transcribed it, and we put it online. So let's say one of our student veterans, somebody is working with that interview. They would search on the word Afghanistan. And what the OHMS interface does is, if you're working in the indexing side, is you'll see a list of titles that pertain to Afghanistan, and you choose one of those titles. Now, all those keywords, if it's being keyworded with Afghanistan, with a click will take you to that moment. So let's say we're in the 67th minute of that interview. It takes you right to that moment when he starts talking about his experience there in Afghanistan. Now, in this particular case, he's talking about where he was in Afghanistan, so there are GPS coordinates. So while you're listening to that moment, you can click, and it brings up the Google map of where he was stationed in Afghanistan. Now, these student veterans also took a ton of photographs while they were deployed and have deposited many of those into the archive. So in this case, not only can you see where this person was on a map, but with another click, you're taken to a picture that shows up in a beautiful light box of this person actually in that location. So what we're doing is really creating a much more engaging experience for the oral history. So we're enhancing, you know, the ability for them to get to these moments, but we're also enhancing the experience once they do get to that moment. Now, if you wanted to go deeper, you can then toggle over to a transcript and actually see actually what was said, as opposed to descriptions of what was said. And the indexing really is proving much more cost-effective because we can do it for one-tenth of the cost. So what we're doing now is primarily indexing our information, our interviews. So we indexed over 900 hours of interview last year. Now, we did that for approximately $16,000. Now, we utilized student employee budgets. We utilized partnerships to get that accomplished. But if we had transcribed that same set of interviews, it would have cost us $180,000. So over one-tenth of the cost, and we're able to turn around 10 times so we're saving money, but we're putting out far more in terms of making interviews accessible to the world. And so it makes sense that people are starting to use it because we're making it so easy to use. But now that it's rolling out to these other institutions, they're starting to really use it in some pretty innovative ways, and that's exciting. We're also constantly developing OHMS, and so we're adding new services to it all the time. We just recently rolled out an improvement to the Google Maps integration that allows you to customize whether you want the user to see the street level or whether you want the user to see the country level, and so you can really determine that. In addition, we're actually about to roll out something that I'm so excited about. We're going to roll out a new bilingual component to OHMS. So you will actually be able to search both a translation and a transcription if you have both of those. And OHMS will take you to the corresponding moment. Additionally, you'll be able to index interviews in two languages. So projects like our Haiti Memory Project, which is focused around interviews about the 2010 earthquake in Haiti, they're all done in Haitian Creole. So now the task turns to, can we get these transcribed and translated so that we can provide this amazing level of access to collections like that?
And where can users interface with this new technology?
You can explore the interviews that are using OHMS at KentuckyOralHistory.org.
And you're always getting new interviews and new projects. Tell us, what are some of the Nunn Center's more recent projects?
Well, we're working on our Civil Rights Hall of Fame here project here, where we're interviewing new inductees into the Civil Rights Hall of Fame, or actually recent inductees into the Civil Rights Hall of Fame. We just finished our bourbon project, so the Kentucky Bourbon Tales project was a multi-year project. But we usually have 15 projects going on at any given time. Right now, we're doing a project on the Pritchard Committee. We're beginning a partnership with Kentucky League of Cities. We have a partnership with Hospice of the Bluegrass. We are consistently doing interviews here on campus for our From Combat to Kentucky project, where we're interviewing student veterans who fought in Iraq and Afghanistan and now are enrolled at Kentucky or other higher ed institutions. We've got a great project that's a partnership on campus called Jewish Kentucky. And the thing about what's different, and that's your original question, was how has it changed? These projects are now being organized with a different, with a very different perspective in mind in terms of result. So I said we used to talk about 500 people using our collections a year in the analog age. We're now counting 8 to 10,000 significant interactions with our collections online per month. I think last month it was like 16,700. And this isn't just clicks. This is actually substantive page views that we're having. And these uses now, thanks to Google Analytics, we know these uses are all over the world. So this isn't just something that's being used by local people here in Kentucky. It's actually having profound impact around the world. Now, when you organize or you design an oral history project, you're actually designing with this level of, you know, with this level of impact in mind, and that's a game changer, and that's exciting to be part of that.
And not just scholars; these are people that just want to do a little research on their own, possibly motivated by personal considerations and things like that.
Almost once a week, we're actually getting notes in from people that say, "I can't believe you have an interview with my great grandfather. I've never heard his voice. I'm so happy you did this interview." We have these serendipitous discoveries of our interviews really happening all over the world. It was a couple years ago we did a Saving Stories episode on one of those discoveries in a small town in Italy, connecting a veteran who had carved his name in the wall during a battle in 1944 with his four-hour interview that we had here on campus in the Nunn Center. And that I think, really does exemplify that digital technology can indeed make this a much smaller world. But it's not just about throwing digital interviews online. We've put a lot of thought into creating a system that doesn't just allow people to connect to it, but really allows people to engage with it on a much higher level. And that being said, we're starting to use students to actually do a lot of the back-end work. And this is what I think is really a fascinating trend, and people are starting to discover it. Again, we created OHMS, so it makes sense that we're leading the way on this new use of OHMS, but we're starting to partner with professors, and courses are being designed around oral history collections, and it's the students who are actually doing the work, and the students are engaging with these primary sources on a much higher level than ever before. So the students aren't just consumers of this information. So a typical thing would be, professor, hey, students, I want you to listen to these oral histories and write about it. You know, no, these students are actually participating and engaging in really deep listening, deep description. And what's happening is they're loving it. The professors love it because they're actually using a hip digital humanities tool to engage their students with primary sources. And the archive loves it because we're actually getting work. So these students are creating indexes that we're actually able to then put online in a much more efficient fashion than ever before. So UK Libraries really is taken to the next level, I think, in terms of our ability to engage with students in the classroom through this really simple tool that we created.
Our guest today on UK Perspectives has been Doug Boyd, the director of the Louis B. Nunn Center for Oral History in the UK Libraries. Our full interview is available as a podcast at wuky.org. For WUKY, I'm Alan Lytle.